Hi, I'm Brian McCreath, and this is The Answered Question, a podcast from WCRB in Boston. Each week, we meet musicians who create great classical music performances in concert halls around Boston and beyond. Today, you'll hear from conductor Christoph von Dohnányi and the principal double bass player of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, Edwin Barker. But before those conversations, let's talk about The Answered Question. There's a reference embedded in the title of this podcast, and here's the story. In 1908, Charles Ives wrote a piece called The Unanswered Question. It has this amazingly ethereal, floating sort of sound from a string section, and a solo trumpet comes in to ask what Ives called the perennial question of existence. The only response the trumpet gets is from a gaggle of flutes, who get increasingly annoyed when this question is asked over and over. It's a pretty incredible little 7 minutes of music, and it leaves us in a state of wonder and mystery. Well, our hope is that the answered question will unlock some of the mystery of music. That's an impossible task, after all. If the power of music wasn't mysterious, what's the point? But by talking to the people who make the music, we're hoping that a few answers to the questions we ask might just make those mysteries a bit easier and, frankly, a bit more fun to grapple with. So let's get right to it. In March, the Boston Symphony did a deep dive into Mozart over the course of a few weeks, two of which were conducted by Christoph von Dohnányi. Dohnányi is the very picture of the eminent old world conductor. His family history is incredible. His grandfather was Ernst von Dohnányi, one of the great composers of the early and mid 20th century, and a link to romantic composers like Brahms and Joseph Joachim, both of whom were big fans of Dohnányi's music, which is really saying something. And after studying with his grandfather, Christoph von Dohnányi went on to be one of the great conductors of the last century, highlighted by a 20-year tenure as the music director of the Cleveland Orchestra. During the first week that Dohnányi conducted the BSO in March, the program included Mozart's Hofner Symphony, and he mentioned during our interview that week that in Mozart's symphonies there should be one pulse that runs through every movement of the piece. Now that's a fairly interesting concept to hear about, especially from someone like him, but maybe it's even better to hear how that concept actually sounds. So I took that performance of the Hofner and broke it down, putting short excerpts of each movement together in sequence to see how consistent the pulse is. Check it out. If you were tapping your foot, you hardly had to adjust at all to the pulses you heard parts of each of the four movements. It's not quite strict enough to apply a metronome, and yes, I did try, but the variation is just a result of the slight calibrations and adjustments that make for great interpretations. And that whole exercise is relevant to the second concert that Dohnányi conducted with the BSO. It was nothing but Mozart symphonies, and more specifically, the remarkable final three symphonies the composer wrote. So picking up on our previous conversation, I asked him how he figures out precisely what the pulse should be for any given piece.
For the whole music of Mozart, you know, whatever he wrote, you know, there's a certain pulse you have to find. You usually find it from the slow movements. You see, then if you develop the right tempo for the slow movements, and then you find also the pulse for the faster ones.
Well, that is really interesting. I guess you sort of calibrate off of the slow movements. If I might ask, just how did that process come to you? Is it something you were taught, or is it something you discovered over time?
No, I didn't discover it. I mean, that's what Leopold Mozart, the father of Mozart, tells us about music making, you know. So he would do dim, 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 maybe. Then the second movement would be, and so on. So in a sense, it is just this part, and if you read Leopold Mozart, you find the explanation.
That's fantastic. Wow. Well, you spent the first part of your career largely in opera houses, and I know you still do opera. First of all, I guess in general terms, do you believe that opera is something that every conductor should do, and why? And specifically, does your work with Mozart operas inform how you work with his symphonies?
That's a good question, because actually I think it is very important to do opera once you're a young conductor. I started as a coach, and then I started conducting operettas and things like that. I was the assistant of Scholti in those days, and actually he gave lots of chances and later became rather young. I was in those days the youngest chief conductor of an opera house, and actually then you discover how it works in opera and how the flexibility of conducting is important and so on. So it's a wonderful school, and it's so wonderful music, you know, you find in, and you get to know how singing works, and you coach singers and do chamber music. It is really very, very important. But I also think, especially in Mozart, if you haven't conducted the Mozart operas, I don't believe in your Mozart very much.
Well, how does that...
Yes, I mean, if you take the G minor symphony, for instance, in number 14 now, this is just, I mean, that's full of opera music, you know. It's a great dramatic G minor for Mozart was desperation, was committing suicide, you know, if you go to Zauberflöte, the magic flute. And Pamina is trying almost at the state of being, of killing herself. And Papageno dies once it's G minor. And so that's really very important to know. And Mozart was so conscious about keys, for instance. And the G minor is not a nice symphony. It's a dramatic symphony and a very dark symphony in some way. So, if you know Mozart operas, and even I staged quite a few of them myself, and that's a terrific experience.
And is there a sort of narrative, do you think, that an audience feels by hearing these three symphonies in quick succession on one program?
Yeah, it's the so-called three latest symphonies by Mozart, and they have they are somehow related, because they were written in a rather short time. And I think that justifies to do all three of them in one concert. But many times you do just one of them, you know.
Well, I have to confess that I went to hear many times during the 1980s, the Cleveland Orchestra, when you were conducting. I was in Ohio. And I guess I'm curious about that time in, I think it was 1984, when you arrived to be music director. You were music director designate for some time before that. And tell me what it was like to come to this country where your career had mostly been in Europe, and you were taking over one of the great orchestras of this country. What was your approach at the time to tackling that job and becoming the point person for the Cleveland Orchestra?
You know, I was, of course, by then already almost 16 years, you know, chief conductor of rather big opera houses, where you also do concert, of course. You know, in Germany, we have an opera. I was the intendant of the and music director of the Frankfurt Opera for 9 years. And 9 years I also did the concerts of these in these institutions, same in Hamburg. So in a way, and before in Lübeck, of course, where I started, and I just stepped up the ladder. So in some way, I think it worked out. And the wonderful people in the Cleveland Orchestra, there was actually kind of friendship from the very beginning, you know. So I had a good time there, and lots of experience in conducting already.
Yeah, and the orchestra brought with it a certain kind of sound that had been developed at Severance Hall, and I guess at that time in your life, I'm assuming you wanted to embrace that sound, but also bring your own voice to it.
Yes, sure. We met very quickly to find out that we have the same goal, you know, sound-wise and so on. So the orchestra was, I must say, very supportive from the very first moment on, and it stayed being supported till I left after 20 years, you know. So.
Well, it really was, for me, a terrific time to get to know the sound of orchestras through your orchestra at that time.
Yeah, but of course, let's face it, I mean, Georges Selle, who kind of founded this orchestra, you know, he actually was, of course, a great opera conductor, too. His career was also opera, like most of the European. They start in opera, and later, once opera is getting too complicated, and is sometimes, you know, people are canceling, and you hear, I mean, I once rehearsed Elektra, for instance, by Richard Strauss, and I rehearsed 6 weeks, and then the Elektra canceled at the dress rehearsal. So, I mean, then you're saying that you don't want to go all your life through that, you know. But still, it's a wonderful métier, the opera.
Yeah, well, it is.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's good to talk with you about that time. It's something that I've really cherished ever since then. So thank you for your time today, Christoph von Dohnányi.
Thank you very much, yes.
That's Christoph von Dohnányi, who led the Boston Symphony Orchestra this season in the last three symphonies by Mozart. And I have to mention one other thing about Dohnányi. When I talked with him, it was immediately after one of the rehearsals with the orchestra. And as that rehearsal ended, I was waiting outside the conductor's room, which is up a set of stairs from the stage at Symphony Hall. I heard him walking up those stairs, and as he came up, he was whistling one of the tunes from the Jupiter Symphony. And I thought, well, that's a good sign when your legendary conductor of the week is having such a good time with the music that he's whistling it on his way to an interview. This is The Answered Question, a podcast from WCRB in Boston. I'm Brian McCreath. During that week with Christoph von Dohnányi, I also talked with Edwin Barker, the principal double bass player of the BSO, and he had some great insights into those Mozart symphonies as well. But we started by talking about a recent appearance he made when he was the soloist with the Boston Modern Orchestra Project in John Harbison's Concerto for Bass, Viol, and Orchestra. So I asked him about why Harbison gave the piece that name and how the concerto compares to Harbison's symphonies, which the BSO has performed and recorded.
I think John Harbison writes for the instrument, the idiom, where he sees its potential and its capabilities. And in the instance of the double bass, or bass viol, or string bass, or contrabass, or bull fiddle, or whatever you want to call it, the double bass, or the modern string bass that we play in the symphony orchestra, really is essentially the only member of the viol family that is still being played now. It has to do with the structural characteristics. A lot of double basses have flat backs, for example. The shoulders are very sloped. These are all viol characteristics. So that whereas the violin, viola, and cello are members of the violin family, the bass essentially is still the member of the viol family. And so I think he gets his title from that concept. John, of course, as we all know, has worked extensively with Baroque music and early music as well. And so he has an understanding of that. And the piece that he wrote has a lot of those characteristics. He writes colors for the instrument that are very viol-like. For instance, it starts off with no vibrato, for example. And it's a sort of like a viol consort between the soloist and the first stand of basses in the orchestra. Later on, there are jazz aspects to the piece. The bass, of course, is a very rhythmic and instrument that is used a lot in popular and jazz idioms. So those aspects are also put into the piece. And the really interesting thing, it's wonderful to have a bass piece that is written for us, specifically for us, by a major composer. It's beautifully orchestrated. He knows that the bass is essentially a rather soft, intimate instrument, it being a viol rather than a violin. Viols are softer. They were meant for small rooms. And so when he orchestrated the piece, whenever there was a solo line for the soloist, the orchestra texture thinned out beautifully. So he really knew what he was doing. It's very skillfully written, extremely virtuosic, very, very difficult, but very idiomatic also, which is really nice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, those do describe his orchestral music as well. I mean, he knows what he's doing with every single part of the orchestra. So
very skilled composer.
Yeah,
very skilled.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. That's a great summary. Thank you for that. Well, and then turning to this week's concert, where you're playing all three of the last symphonies by Mozart.
Yes. Speaking of great composers.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. Right. So this is full immersion into Mozart. What challenge does that place specifically on the bass section of the orchestra to just be dwelling within these three great symphonies for an entire week?
Well, having just spent a day rehearsing this repertoire, I must say that it's time for me to go home and soak my hands in warm water. What I found with over the years that I've been performing orchestral chamber music and solo repertoire is that the best pieces by the greatest composers are also the most challenging in just about every way, musically, intellectually, emotionally, and physically. These pieces are very athletic, not just for the basses, but for the whole orchestra. Maestro Dohnányi has a setup on stage the way Mozart, I think, conceived of the piece, which is he's got the first violins on their usual side of the orchestra and the seconds on the other side opposite them. So there's an antiphonal kind of quality to it, which means that the basses are over by the first violins. And so we get to sit essentially in and among the violins. And having rehearsed these pieces this week, I've really come to respect the athleticism of our violin section and our string section generally. It's a very athletic piece of music. And in particular, the last movements of these symphonies, very active, and essentially a lot of what the violins play is traded among the other string sections, and we get a lot of that. So there's a lot of back and forth. They give the ball to us, we run with it, basically.
Yeah.
So a lot of those very difficult passages we have to play as well, and that's challenging. So I think, yes, I will go home and soak my hands in a bucket of beer, maybe. That might work well.
There you go. Well, and along with being so athletic, I was in part of your rehearsal today, and to the credit of the orchestra, it doesn't sound athletic, right? So there's still this element of grace and ease, I think, that has to be part of these.
Well, sports. I think instrumental playing, that's what we do. It's not unlike being a fine athlete. Actually, it is like being an athlete in a lot of ways. It's mind-body connection. We use smaller muscle groups than typical athletes, but great athletes manage to infuse a lot of soul in what they do. It's actually artistry, and they make it look easy.
Yeah.
And that's what we do.
Yeah.
That's our thing.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, and you anticipated another question, which was simply about the positioning of where you are on the stage. And along with trading off with violins and sort of getting that extra glimpse at what their task is all about, is there a way that position on the stage also just changes your experience of the sound world that you are in while you're on the stage?
Absolutely. I think for all of the years that we played with Maestro Ozawa, we were on the other side of the stage, the side of the stage where the tuba and the brass tend to sit, and you start to develop a whole set of reflexes that accommodate that. So I found it's very interesting when James Levine became music director, he liked the setup, the antiphonal setup, where the basses were over by the first violins. That does a number of things, not the least of which we are very close to the melody line or the moving line, so there's no sound lag involved, and so we can react very quickly. It becomes very much like a chamber music setting. But I also have to say that the reflexes that I've spent years developing on one side had to be changed a little bit on the other side. Frankly, it's very interesting what you get coming in through the right ear, music in terms of the sound on the stage, you get used to. And then when you switch sides of the stage, all of a sudden, a lot of that's coming in through the left ear, and different things are coming in through the right ear, and that actually is a neurological thing. And so there's a little bit of getting used to. I would assume there's even a little bit of rewiring that goes on that has to do that. Since Levine has been here, we've become accustomed to moving on either side of the stage. It's sort of we're sort of accustomed to having the soup stirred up a little bit, and so it's become more more comfortable.
So there's a piece in the program book this week, I don't know if you saw it, that Gerald Elias wrote about these Mozart symphonies. And he gets into a little bit of his memories of playing them with the BSO and identifying with certain conductors, certain characteristics that with no judgment on them, just things like Tennstedt saying that number 39 is the first romantic symphony. But then Kurt Mazur conducted it as though it was maybe the last classical symphony, completely different perspective, right? And I'm just curious from your perspective, you've been in the orchestra 1977, is that right?
I started in 1977. I'm not even going to count, tell you how many years that is.
Okay, we'll leave that behind. We have other people who want to do math.
Yeah, but you can do the math,
But I guess when you see so many different conductors in so many circumstances, what is it that, what qualities are there that make a conductor, and maybe even a particular performance, stand out in your memory as something you really... you use as a touchstone when you're thinking back on the years?
Well, are you speaking specifically of Mozart, or are you generally speaking?
Let's say Mozart, sure.
Well, you know, I think Maestro Dohnányi's interpretation is, it seems to me to be more on the side that espouses the romanticism or the big, full, red-blooded, full-bodied approach. And That's an approach that I understand and kind of agree with. I like that. I think these symphonies were right on the edge, on the cusp. That's what makes them so great. They can be interpreted either way, all three of these symphonies. And I happen to think they really set the stage for a lot of what followed in the 19th century. In particular, Beethoven, who then, of course, had a massive influence on the 19th century. These three symphonies probably were the first, I mean, I'm no musicologist, but I get the sense that they were the first symphonies that were written with posterity in mind rather than as pure sort of entertainment for the present. They were written for future audiences, future listeners. That, of course, is a 19th century concept for sure. And I think these symphonies are right on the edge of that. Yeah. So I tend to like those full red-blooded interpretations. Although I must say that we have done interpretations with conductors that have infused a more period style or approach. And the ones that are good can make a good case for that.
Yeah.
Especially with modern instruments. So I lament the fact that we don't play this repertoire actually more often. It's wonderful repertoire, and I'm really glad we're doing this, as challenging as this program is this week.
Yeah. Real quickly, out of curiosity, what is it that drew you to the double bass as your instrument very early on?
Well, that's a good question. I started playing the bass when I was in the fourth grade, all right? This was in the mid-60s. The Beatles had just invaded America. I was in the fourth grade. We had a mandatory string program. And that was sort of at a time when actually there was more money devoted towards these kinds of programs.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people of my generation got started because of that cultural priority.
Yeah.
So we had a mandatory string program. You know, you had to play the instrument for 1 year, and then you could give it up if you wanted or whatever. But the long story short is that I really wanted to play the drums. And I didn't know much about music or the string instruments, but the teacher said, the music teacher came to me and said, "You're tall and you have big hands. How would you like to play the bass?" And I said, yes, I want to play the bass. And the next day, I thought he meant bass drum. And I really wanted to play the drums. I mean, what 9-year-old boy doesn't want to play the drums,
right?
So he brought the bass out the next day, and it was a monster.
Yeah.
But the long story short is I took to it very quickly, and I had really good teachers. And it caught fire.
Wow.
And so that's how it got going.
Yeah, yeah, good. Well, and there have been many people who have been in the bass section during your time in the BSO. How would you describe the collection of characters you've got in the bass section right now as a group?
It's a great bunch of guys in this section, and they're all virtuoso players. It's really a wonderful section, and we all play with the same sensibility in terms of color, articulation, intonation. It's very interesting. There are elements of this Mozart program this week. The players in this orchestra, many of them like to play 19th century English instruments. They're really high quality, wonderful sounding instruments. And we have three instruments by the same maker in this section, instruments made by Thomas Kennedy. They're mid-19th century English instruments, and they're very highly regarded instruments. And it's one of these pieces. We have a configuration where there are three players in the section all playing Kennedy basses. We all play the same style. We all have the same sensibility. I've played in a number of major orchestras. That never happens, that kind of thing.
Wow.
It's really, really, really nice, very interesting. That never happens. And we've been, knock on wood, we've been really, really successful over the last, 30 years or so with building a bass section that is really very, very comfortable and fun to play in, high-quality players. All of them care about music. All of them, most of them slightly obsessive-compulsive, which is what you have to be really good in this business.
Okay.
And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
It's a real pleasure.
Edwin Barker, thanks a lot for talking with me today.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Edwin Barker is the principal double bass player of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. The concert he and I talked about, featuring the final three symphonies by Mozart, conducted by Christoph von Dohnányi, is available to hear on demand at our website, classicalwcrb.org/BSO. I hope you can check it out along with the BSO Concert Channel, a 24/7 internet stream of exclusive Boston Symphony concert performances from Symphony Hall and from Tanglewood. I'm Brian McCreath, and thanks for listening to The Answered Question.